Of 31, I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The morning show with Greg Berg is coming up. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and I am just as excited as I can be to have with me in the studios, first of all, a faculty colleague from Carthage, Seth Weidman, who is the assistant athletic director at Carthage and also the head men's swimming and diving coach. And he has been at Carthage for 8 years. And the Carthage men's swimming and diving team just took their fifth consecutive CCIW championship. CCIW refers to the Conference of Illinois and Wisconsin. So Carthage was an emphatic victor over competitors like Augustana, Wheaton, and Carroll, and Illinois Wesleyan, and again taking home their fifth conference championship in a row. And Seth Weidman walked away with the Coach of the Year Award from CCIW. So there's all kinds of things to celebrate. And at the forefront of the team's success is a senior by the name of Adam Moskus, who is a senior political science minor, a business management major, and someone who has been a very impressive leader on Carthage's team, an All-American, scholar All-American, and many times over all-conference honors as a swimmer, originally from Ann Arbor, Michigan. And we're going to be talking not only about the big success of Carthage's swim team, but also sort of taking an inside look at this sport, which a lot of us only view from a distance and don't really understand what it takes to achieve this kind of success at this level. And I hope we'll have a minute or two to also talk with Seth Weidman about all that he is responsible for as assistant athletic director at Carthage. Seth Weidman, Adam Moskus, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you, Greg.
Good to have both of you here. Let me turn up Adam just a little bit. We don't want to miss a word. So, first of all, Seth, tell us just a little bit about kind of the history of Carthage's swim team and dive team. And, of course, part of that history even predates you with the construction of the spectacular TARC, the Tarpaulin Athletic Center, which includes that amazing pool. But the legacy of championships at Carthage, I think, extends even before that.
It does. So, you know, I'll take you, I guess, all the way back to 1847, like we like to do at Carthage, right? So let's go back to Hillsboro, Illinois. So there was no swim team back when the school first started. not a team when they went to Springfield, not a team when they shifted over to Carthage, Illinois. Once we moved here to Kenosha, Wisconsin, not that long after, so it still took a little while, but in the early 70s, I believe, is when construction started on the Seidman Auditorium, which is where the old, or where the student union is now. So actually, if you stand in the Carthage bookstore, you are standing in the spot of the six-lane pool that was there. And if you look up at the ceiling, you'll see the same beams that were there all the way back then. So they actually kept a few things intact. And I bring recruits through there when they're on their recruiting trips because it's a really interesting story. So
I did not know that. All the times I've been in there, I had no idea that that was – I'll look next time.
Yeah, the whole student union and press box above was built around the old pool. And so, you know, back then there was some success, certainly with a sprinter named Judson Konitzer from the Konitzer family, which is actually the namesake of our natatorium. So it's the Konitzer Aquatic Center, a strong Carthage family. I think six kids, I believe they all went to Carthage. They at least most of them went to Carthage. Judd was at the time the first All-American swimmer for Carthage in the late 70s. There was also a diver. I feel bad that I'm blanking on his name right now, but there was also a really successful diver at the time. So, some sort of CCIW individual champions at that time. Again, an All-American in Judd Konitzer in the late 70s into the early 80s. But a little bit of a dry spell after that. So, you know, like a lot of small liberal arts colleges, at the time, athletics wasn't such a focus. So even though Carthage had a lot of success in certain sports, in other sports like swimming, it just wasn't quite there. The roster numbers were kind of low. Into the late 80s and early 90s, there was actually even a year or two where they did not field a team. And there was not a coach at Carthage for swimming. So that was interesting. And that led to Sue Nutty being hired. I don't know if you remember Sue Nutty. She taught in the exercise science department as well. She taught some interesting classes like kayaking and canoeing, which I would love to bring back to Carthage at some point. And so she did a really great job beginning to build the team up again, even in the old pool before the new pool got built. So late 90s came around and the plans came to build the TARC and build the new beautiful pool. And she remained as the head women's coach. She had been the coach of both men and women. But once they finished the pool, they hired Greg Earhart, who was the head men's coach for about 12 years. So he and Sue were coaches for a few years together, and then Sue decided to move on. And that's when Beth Della Roseby got hired as the head women's coach, and her and Greg were coaches together for a few years before I came on. So Greg had started to have a lot of success, won a few championships at the time, brought a lot of really great swimmers to nationals, as Beth did as well. So both the men's and women's team just started to have a lot of success there in the kind of the mid-2000s. And when I came on, my hope was to continue that. And we've been able to continue that and in some ways even kind of go beyond that, especially at the conference level with this five championships in a row, which has been really fun.
Amazing. So describe for somebody, especially who has never set eyes on the pool at Carthage, what it looks like and what makes it so impressive. I mean, what makes it such a great facility?
Yeah, so architecturally first, I guess, you know, we have the benefit of being kind of the centerpiece and the gem right when you walk in, the main entrance of the TARC. It's the first thing that you see, right? So you come in, it's glass on three sides of it, which is very unique for a pool. Many pools, you know, are lucky to get any sunlight in from windows. And again, we have windows on two outside walls and one interior wall that just bring a lot of sunlight flooding in, which is great. So that makes it really beautiful just aesthetically. We're also very fortunate for a school our size. It's a large pool. So many colleges of our size, if they have an older pool, the way that Carthage's older pool was, it might only be a six-lane pool. A lot of schools are lucky to have an eight-lane pool that are these small liberal arts schools. And ours is 16 lanes. So ours is kind of double the size of a traditional small liberal arts campus's pool. Still not quite as large as a, you know, University of Minnesota, University of Michigan, that type of thing, but which are more the true 50-meter Olympic size pool. But you wouldn't know it from looking at ours that it's not. Not that we try to hide that it's not, but it is. It's the nature of how it got built that it's not. It's another one of those unique Carthage things where we have the bluff on one side and we have the river on the other side, and there's only so much room.
Not going to move the river.
So, and they weren't going to move Art Keller Field either.
Right.
So we're kind of wedged in between the west side of the bluff and where Art Keller Field starts, and that gave us 45 meters or so to build a pool, and that came out 16 lanes, so 10 racing lanes, an extra 6 lanes when we're training. So it's a really, really great facility.
It's amazing. Adam, I don't want to leap ahead in terms of your own personal story, but I know from reading up about you that you actually transferred to Carthage from some other school where you began, but I'm guessing this spectacular facility at Carthage and the TARC had something to do with you wanting to come to Carthage. Can you just say a word about this pool and the TARC and to what extent that was a real draw for you?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest things about Carthage's facilities is that it allows the men's and the women's team to train together, and it allows us to all train at the same time. I mean, we have, all my 4 years, we've had around 70 people on the team at any given time. And so when you have a pool that size, not only do you get the draw of a lot of talent in the area, but you get to have a team where you just feel together all the time, which is, in swimming, a really nice thing to have, because you don't feel together when you're face down in the water for 2.5 hours every day.
Right. Well, yeah, and it's interesting. I suppose it's one of the things that's a hallmark of swimming is that it really is, when it comes right down to it, very much an individual endeavor and an individual sport, but you are part of a team, and it sounds like the way it works at Carthage, that's fostered. And I suppose that's one of your challenges as a coach, to be coaching all of these individuals, but as a team. How do you weigh those two things?
Yeah, so the NCAA loves to call sports like ours individual team sports, is what they call them. So it's maybe a little bit of a silly name, but it really does, I think, really get to what we try to do, especially here at Carthage. As you say, it's so individual. When you are racing your individual races at swim meets, it is you in your lane with your, whatever it is, 6 to 8 competitors that are next to you on either side, and you're following that black line on the bottom of the pool, and you're very focused on what you're doing. I think the part that the public sees that's very team-oriented is relays, right? Mm. So really, just like in track and field, you have relays where it's 4 people swimming at once, you know, trading off the legs that they're swimming. And that's the part that you see that feels very team-oriented. Mm. And so that's certainly important, but I think we try to move beyond that and really make it feel day in and day out with training, and especially at meets, with just going nuts and cheering for each other and supporting each other to really make it feel like it's a team sport as much as it is an individual sport. And that's not always easy, because it is, you know, so much of the training is your head down in the pool, as Adam said, and you're kind of just grinding it out. But I think when you can have everybody training together and, you know, also adding in some team bonding elements. So anytime you're traveling together, you know, when we're spending overnight trips, if we go over to Michigan and do an overnight trip in Grand Rapids, which we do every year, you know, you're staying in hotels together, you're on the coach bus together, and that makes it feel as much like a team as any other sport does. Mm-hmm. And that really helps.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Seth Weidman, who is head men's diving and swim coach at Carthage, and one of his star swimmers, senior Adam Moskas. They have just taken home their 5th consecutive CCIW championship. That's the Conference of Illinois and Wisconsin. So I want to ask each of you what drew you to swimming. I'm pretty sure you were a swimmer, Seth, but let's start with Adam. We haven't heard from him in a little bit. Tell us a little bit, Adam, about what drew you to the sport of swimming in the first place. Is this something maybe that your mom and dad did, or what else was it that drew you to the pool?
So I was the first swimmer in my family, at least competitively. And when I was growing up, I would always play seasonal sports. So, you know, spring rolls around, soccer, winter rolls around, basketball, so on and so forth. And when summer rolls around, I swam at my local neighborhood swim team. And for the most part, I was not very good. But my mom specifically kept encouraging it because she wanted me to not drown if I was ever near the countless bodies of water in Michigan. And so she kept pushing it. And eventually, one year, I got good at it. And I was better at it than any other sport. And so I asked my parents, can I swim year round? To which they said, nope. You got to be, I mean, at this point, I think I was 10 or 11. Mm. And they were like, you play other sports, you want to be well-rounded. Mm. And they said, but if you keep asking, if you hold this interest in it, then we'll let you join a year-round swim club. I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but eventually I kept asking, and I started swimming year-round, and then I started enjoying the feeling of winning. And that stuck with me. And then once I entered high school, that was really when it took hold. And yes, that's when you get to feel that there is this team aspect to swimming as well. And I think that that's what was kind of the nail in the coffin for staying in the sport. Mm. Because I was so used to these team sports. And I was loving the individual success and being able to push myself. But when you have the team as well, that's when it stuck with me.
Yeah. So when you had this breakthrough where suddenly you started to really become good, what was that breakthrough about, or what was behind that breakthrough? Or were you just becoming in better shape, or was your technique improving, or is it hard to even say why you suddenly started to succeed in a way you hadn't before?
It started when I was on this neighborhood swim team, OHAC, Orchard Hills Athletic Club. And we got a new coach, and he was this big muscular guy that swam for the University of Buffalo. Mm. And he was really intense. Mm. And I was relatively athletic growing up as a kid. I wasn't a good swimmer, but he started doing these intensive practices where he took the good swimmers from the age groups and doing this separate thing. And that gave me this motivation, like, oh, I'm not just an average swimmer. Like, I'm above average. That's really cool.
Or you at least have the potential.
Have the potential or something like that. And I had a ton of great role models within my neighborhood as well. There are a lot of older kids, either the grade above me or a few grades up, where, you know, you're this little kid and you see these big kids swim in the water and they've got this wake behind them. You're like, I want to go fast enough to where I have a wake behind me. I want to look that cool. And so that, for a long time, that was my goal, to have this wake behind me.
Wow.
And I kept pushing myself. And at the end of the season, I think I was 11. We have this big championship in Ann Arbor for all of the club or neighborhood swim teams. And my coach put me in the 50 free. And he was like, look, you've been doing pretty well this season. I think you might have a chance to, you know, get in the top eight. And I was like, whoa, I've never done that before. And he gave me this dome cap, and he gave me an old tech suit, and I was so nervous, and I ended up winning, was the coolest thing. I think that was the biggest driver for me. That was the moment where I was like, oh my gosh, because I was swimming against all these kids who had swam year-round since they were 6, 7, 8, and my parents weren't even letting me swim year-round.
Wow.
And so that was the biggest point in my life where I was like, yeah, this is, I like this, and I want to keep going.
Yeah, the taste of success and excellence, and just realizing you're really, really good at something. That's the sweetest feeling in the world.
Yep.
That's great. Seth, what drew you to swimming?
Yes, so similar story very early on. I'm the younger brother of an older sister who's 3 years older, and she had kind of taken on the role that Adam took on in his family, I think, which was the first, right? So the first swimmer, you know, a family of people who loved the water, but certainly were not competitive swimmers. So, I think that her taking on that kind of neighborhood community type of club that she was part of when she was about 7 years old or so, you know, that got me more inspired to maybe stay in the sport a little bit longer. So, you know, I was in swim lessons from the time I was 2 or 3 years old, but by the time I was 4 and she was doing that, the family was kind of like, well, maybe this will be something that we're going to do a little bit longer. So by the time I turned 7, in that summer, I started swimming in a similar type of, you know, program to what Adam is describing, just kind of a more neighborhood club thing. That was down in Evanston, Skokie in Evanston, Illinois, is where I grew up. And, you know, I think I had maybe a little bit more of a love-hate relationship with it than Adam did. I loved it at first. I swam for that first year. I did have some success, even as like an 8-year-old, right? But then I actually pulled back from it, and I took a year off at that point. I wanted to do other sports. It was very much the team that we had started on, even though in the summer it felt more like the casual type of program that Adam was talking about. It was more of a year-round focused program. And while I probably wasn't quite as athletic as Adam was, and I wasn't doing a lot of outside sort of team, organized team sports, I was doing a lot of neighborhood sports with my friends in the neighborhood. But I had these other interests, so I pulled away from it, started again when I was 10, tried to quit when I was 14, got kind of sucked into the high school aspect the way that Adam did. Tried to quit again after high school, didn't think I wanted to swim in college. And so it was really this kind of like push and pull thing, or sort of, you know, again, I like to say love hate thing, because there was obviously something there that had kind of, you know, dug its talons in some way. But it wasn't something that I ever saw myself having a career in. Again, even later in high school, I didn't see myself swimming beyond high school. And then it just happened, because I knew I wanted a school. I knew I wanted a small liberal arts school. You know, I'd become a pretty successful swimmer by my senior year of high school, but I knew I didn't want to be at a large state school or a Division I program where that was my sole focus. And, you know, I had other interests. And so when I ended up at Gustavus Adolphus College in Minnesota, it was just the right fit for both the, you know, it was a very competitive team that was growing, and my class that came in was a really great, large, competitive class. And so that made it a lot of fun to be part of something like that. And so I think that fun and the competitiveness is what kind of kept pulling me towards doing it. But even through college, I never would have thought. I would have told you that being a swim coach was the last thing on my mind for a career. And, you know, 20 years later, here we are.
Right. I am struck by some of the parallels between your world and my world of music that, you know, for instance, just because you're a good singer and you love to sing in the choir, that doesn't mean you should be the choir director up front. I mean, it's very closely related, but it's really a very different skill set. So what was it that ultimately drew you into coaching, and what do you think it is about yourself that has allowed you to be such a successful coach? And I'm going to have Adam weigh in then after you're done talking.
So I guess the pull into at least trying it out probably came in college. I was my summer job was a swim instructor down in Evanston, Illinois, because I was still spending my summers down there, even though I was at college in Minnesota. So that, you know, a little bit of a bug there, maybe just, you know, I liked the teaching of the younger kids, and I got to do a little bit of coaching of the older kids at that time over the summers. At the same time, you know, I was a communications major and history minor in college, and without a very clear path. So I think maybe my coach, John Carlson at Gustavus, also saw that I had a wide variety of interests. And I did have maybe kind of a strong swimming mind. I was passionate about a lot of aspects of it. Sometimes the pure X's and O's and strategy and technique and everything, but probably even more so the kind of psychology of it. I think he realized by my junior senior year that maybe I didn't have a clear path. I wasn't, even though I was interested in history, I wasn't going to go on and be a history teacher. Even, you know, I wasn't going to go to law school. I thought about going to film school or broadcasting with my communications stuff, but I didn't have those plans. So he said, do you want to be a swim coach? And, you know, he was always, every couple of years, he was looking for a new assistant and was kind of talking me into doing that side of things while I was also kind of pulled and had this job opportunity. Really, the only pure job opportunity I had was either staying on and being assistant swim coach at my alma mater or going back to the Chicagoland area and taking a full-time coaching job down there. And yeah, it was something that I thought I would do for a few years and then move on and do something else. And as I said before, here we are. And yeah, I think the things that kept me in it was, you know, I still do love the competitiveness of it. I mean, you just can't deny what it's like to be at a swim meet the way that we just were a couple weeks ago. At our CCIW conference championship, you know, it was really a perfect example of why we do what we do. I mean, it was the closest finish since 1979. Mm. The first time since the 70s that it came down to the very last relay, which doesn't usually happen at big three-day meets like this. You know, by the end of the second day, it's pretty clear who's going to be the winner.
Yeah.
That was not the case this year.
Wow.
So, you know, just that, you know, all those nerves and that excitement, while it's just so draining and you tell yourself you never want to go through it again when it's all done, in the back of your mind, you know you want to go through it again, actually. You know, it's so there's that piece of it that I think has really, you know, kept me interested. And then on top of that, the previous 9 or so years that I spent before I came up here to Carthage, I was at this the YWCA in Evanston, where we had the second largest club team in Illinois. So, you know, 600 kids on the team, some Olympic trials qualifiers, national level swimmers, right? So really successful. But at the same time, our main focus, or I'd say our focus at least as much as that really high-level competitive swimming, was on trying to bring the sport of swimming and water safety to as many people as possible. And that was this other side of it that was just so interesting to me. And, you know, you can't work for the YWCA, which, you know, its motto since the 70s has been eliminating racism and empowering women. And it's just this amazing advocacy organization. And you can't work for an organization like that, even if you are mainly the head swim coach there. You can't work there and not really be passionate about that other side of things as well. And so I think that's just another thing that really kept me interested in it enough. That in all honesty, it was hard to pull me away from that to come up here to Carthage, where at least for my first few years here, the focus was really just on how do you continue a successful collegiate swimming program.
Right. That has its own pressures and kind of intimidating. But
right.
Needless to say, you've managed to do that. Adamoskis, one of your star swimmers, what do you appreciate about Seth Weidman as a coach? What strengths do you think he brings to the task of coaching you and your teammates?
So to preface that, I think Division III swimming is this anomaly within the world of collegiate sports where, I mean, swimming is not an enjoyable task for, I mean, we swim for 18 weeks straight and throughout winter, it's cold, and there's no reason that we have to be there. Every person on that team, unlike Division I and Division II, where they have financial incentives and they have their own personal incentives, we have no other reason to be on the team other than pure enjoyment. And that's hard to do in a sport like swimming because it's not that enjoyable at the end of the day. I mean, the meets are euphoric, it's amazing, but the practices are not. Waking up in the morning, diving in the pool, not enjoyable. And I think the most important thing on our team is that Seth understands that. I, at least twice throughout my career, have gone to Seth and said, listen, I'm not feeling in it. I'm feeling burnt out. There's something not clicking. How do we handle this? And he's helped me work through it because at the end of the day, he's been there. He talked about how when he was 14, he tried to quit. After high school, he tried to quit. And so I think when you've got this group of guys that, you know, on a Friday night, instead of practicing, they'd rather be somewhere else, it's really hard to get them to want to be in the pool, to want to work hard. And Seth understanding that concept and how to work around it, how to get us motivated, how to get us to 5 straight CCIW titles, it's rare in a coach. A lot of collegiate coaches emphasize the hard work, the you're here to work hard and be here for the team, but understanding that there is more to swimming and that you need to work with the kids rather than just push them, I think that's his biggest strength.
Hmm. You touched on something that I think I've always assumed was true, which that the practices are not fun. I mean, they sure don't look like fun. And part of it is that they look so tedious. It looks like it's just the same thing that you're doing hour after hour after hour after hour. And it sounds like it's true. So what does keep you going through swimming lap after lap after lap after lap? And are you doing something besides just swimming? I mean, is it something in which you are actively sort of examining and refining your technique, or is it more of just like a building of stamina and just the doing of it?
Swimming is such a mental sport because of what you just talked about. You have to find a way to think about different things, because at the end of the day, if you show up to every practice and just go through the motions, you're not going to become a better swimmer. And so Seth does a good job of designing practices where it looks, and for the most part, feels like you're doing the same thing, but everything has a purpose, which in swimming is relatively rare. A lot of it is just what we call garbage yards, where you just swim for the sake of swimming. But our practices are not like that. You do a lot of, at least so for me as a sprinter, we always have a different focus. And so whether that be our turns or our starts or the middle of our race, we do a lot of visualizing our races and then active visualizing. So we sit on the side of the pool deck, think about a race, envision a race that we want to swim, and then we hop up on the block and swim that race. And a lot of that contributes to and creates practices that aren't as unenjoyable as a lot of other D3 collegiate swimmers are experiencing.
Interesting. That's really great to see. Seth, when you are watching, for instance, Adam and his teammates swim, how hard is it for you to really observe what they're doing when it comes to matters of like their technique, when so much of what they're doing is thrashing under the water? I mean, and it's not, I shouldn't think, easily visible to you.
Yeah, so there's a couple interesting aspects of that. So I'll start with a swimmer like Adam, who, you know, we've already talked about that perhaps is a bit more athletic, has a bit more body awareness, has a stronger, we like to just say, feel for the water, right? Than some other swimmers do. There are a lot of swimmers that, and Adam alluded to this before, that from the time they're 6 years old, all they're doing is swimming. And part of that might be because they come from a swimming family. Part of that might be because they just aren't interested in any of those other land sports. But when you don't have any experience in any of those other sports, sometimes that can lead to great things, right? You could be the next Michael Phelps, who also didn't really do any other sports from the time he was 7 or 8 years old.
And that worked out okay.
That worked out okay for him, but he's the rare exception, right? In so many ways, he's a rare exception. But in this one in particular, a lot of people like that just never end up getting that body awareness, that feel for doing a sport, for how their body moves, which is different in the water. But you can really take some of that athleticism outside of the water. And for some people, it can translate to the water. So for someone like Adam, I think that has helped him over the years. So when we're looking at someone like Adam swim, there's not a ton that needs to be changed when it comes to technique. Like, we talk sometimes, I remember when we were on training trip, right? Something about his feel for his hand entering wasn't quite feeling right, and it wasn't leading to him catching the water the way that he really felt like he wanted to. Now, some of that makes sense to step back and work on, right? If he wasn't as strong of a swimmer, I probably would have pulled him aside for several practices over the course of a couple weeks, or had an assistant like really get into it and like, let's fix what's going wrong here. with someone like him, and I don't even talk to him about this that much, but, you know, for someone like him that doesn't always translate well, you end up fixing something that doesn't really need fixing, that's something that really isn't broken, and something that inevitably is probably going to come together when we're not as broken down, when we're not swimming long course versus short course, when we're at a meet versus at practice, right? So, you know, it is partly my job as a coach to sometimes fix some technique things, but other times to not mess up a good thing, right? That really is a big part of our job as coaches in all sports, but especially in swimming. And so, you find yourself sometimes under-coaching some swimmers and over-coaching other swimmers. And it's just the nature of it. I'm sure you see it in teaching voice and music, right?
Right.
Some people really need a ton of work on things and sort of build things up from that foundational level. And some really just need those few tweaks and really sometimes getting out of the way is what they need more than anything. So, trying to figure that out over the course of having someone for 4 years, sometimes it's really easy and it clicks and you recognize what they need from their freshman year. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer. And, you know, Adam has had a very interesting career as far as we would have liked him for a lot more time. But, you know, as you alluded to, you know, he transferred in halfway through his freshman year and then he has gone to college in this 2 years that we've all lived through COVID, and our seasons have all been impacted because of that. So I'll just be honest, we haven't had as much time with these swimmers these past few years as other years, so we maybe haven't been able to dig into the technique work quite as much. But back to your initial question, it's hard, right? You know, it would be great to have cameras underwater all the time. We do have ways of looking underwater. If something feels really broken and we can't fix it by kind of talking through it and adjusting things that we can see from above the water, we'll throw a camera down there. We have, you know, luckily, because we live in 2022, we have just an underwater camera you can pop under there that's not that expensive, or you have an iPad or an iPhone even with a waterproof case that you can kind of get some footage of. So we do that from time to time, but it's it tends to, at this level, especially for our higher level swimmers like Adam, there aren't these massive adjustments that need to be made in college.
So, for instance, Adam, now that essentially the season is over, right? Does it ever occur to you to just go to the pool and swim? I mean, or has swimming really become for you this thing you do for the team?
Swimming has definitely evolved for me, going from this thing that I need to do constantly year round to, when I got to college, it became more of a balancing act where burnout is real. And if I mentioned before, mindset is a huge part of swimming. If you're not mentally in it when the season starts, there's no way you're going to get through it the whole time. And so as of now, I avoid the pool, at least for now. I just finished 14 years straight of swimming, so I think I deserve a little time off. My body definitely deserves a little time off. But yeah, during the off season, it's for a lot of college swimmers, it's this balancing act of, okay, I need to stay in shape and I need to maintain this feel for the water, but I cannot lose my love for the sport.
Right.
And that's hard to do.
Yeah, I bet. Quickly, what about COVID? What kind of a complication was that for you and your teammates?
You have a very unique COVID story from your time abroad.
Yeah, so I was studying abroad when COVID first hit. I was in Italy. And this was my spring semester of sophomore year. And so I had taken that semester off from swimming. I was, drinking a little too much wine. And then COVID hits and I get sent home from Italy before COVID hits the States. And so I'm home one or two weeks before everything in the U.S. officially shuts down. And then moving forward was just this really difficult period of, I need to be in shape because you're hoping that the pandemic ends, but finding different ways to stay in shape, finding different ways to connect with my teammates who are all at their homes, not being able to swim, not really being able to work out. And then, so that first initial period was really hard for a lot of us, where you just can't get in a pool. Nobody has their own personal pool. We're not a land sport. You can't just do it wherever you want. And right. We were at this big disadvantage where we couldn't swim. And then once we were allowed back last year on campus, we were, balancing with NCAA regulations and Carthage restrictions and just COVID in general. You have a lot of kids who, we were swimming, three times a week? I think it was.
In the fall, yeah.
Three times a week in the fall. And it wasn't enough to stay in competitive shape. We weren't allowed to have meets. We had virtual meets. The inspiration for swimming wasn't there. If you can't swim on a relay with three of your best friends, why are you swimming? Right. And so it was really, really hard. I think mentally it was the biggest challenge.
Right. And I suspect that once some semblance of normalcy returned, I suppose maybe one of the silver linings of it, I don't want to put words in your mouth, was that it probably clarified for a lot of you what this sport means to you when you're able to engage in it more fully.
Absolutely. Yeah. You realize why you do it. And I think for me, one of the biggest things was that coming out of COVID, it came to me really quickly that I had a year left. That was this moment of, this is not something that I have hated. This is something that I've had a love-hate relationship with, but for the most part, I do it because I want to do it. And I've got this year left. I want to make it count.
Yeah. You mentioned that you're a sprinter, so you've excelled in things like the 50 and the 100. And I assume that it's a different kind of challenge versus somebody who's swimming longer events where you have to really think about pacing. Is it as simple with a sprint that you dive off as fast as you can and you swim as fast as you can until it's over? I mean, is that kind of what a sprinter does? Or is it more complicated than that?
It's slightly more complicated than that. I think that what makes a good sprinter, and I'd say I'm a good sprinter, I'm not a great sprinter. There is a level above just going fast that I think a lot of swimmers don't quite grasp, and that is kind of the barrier between swimming fast and sprinting. And that's, you have to be able to basically take your speed up, your arm speed, your kick speed, you can't breathe, all of that has to be on a 10-point scale on an 11. And I think that's the most difficult thing when breaking into the land of sprinting. And you see a lot of swimmers do that. We've had a lot of kids on our team that were good swimmers, but then they just figure out how to move their body that much faster. And that's when you become a sprinter.
Now, do you have guys who are both, or by and large, do swimmers tend to really excel in one or the other?
Yeah, I think that once you're in college, you tend to be compartmentalized a little bit more within sort of the sprinter, the mid-distance swimmer, and the distance swimmer. I would say that the only true distance event in swimming is the mile, so the 1650 in collegiate swimming. And that's just a whole other beast, right? So, you're a truly different type of athlete, I would say, if your focus is on that mile event versus even the next longest event, which is the 500 free or the 400 IM. So, yeah, if you don't see a lot of milers who then also swim the 50 or the 100 like Adam. But you see a lot of swimmers like Adam who, he was kind of alluding to it before, that he might consider himself, I think he's had some great, an exceptional sprint races in his life, but he was sort of discussing how he's not maybe that level of sprinter because he's been a more versatile swimmer throughout his career. So he really has had to stretch from the 50 to at least the 200 freestyle, which is much more of a mid-distance type of swim where you're focused much more on pacing than you are on the 50 or the 100. So, yeah, we're trying to balance that always. And that's why, you know, we talked a little bit about there are certain days where we're truly just focusing on those real sprint principles in swimming. But that tends to only be about half of the week. So the other half of the week, he'd be someone like him who's primarily a sprinter would still be training with the rest of the swimmers who are training more for those mid-distance type of events. Hmm.
Adam, have you had much in the way of injuries during your collegiate career or by and large not too much?
Not a ton. I've been really lucky. Before I even got to high school, I had a shoulder injury, and that was my rotator cuff, just wear and tear. And then once I got to high school, still had a few shoulder problems. And then in college, a few more wear and tear problems. I had a shoulder a few times, and then I had a back problem. But by and large, I've had a pretty open career, or injury-free career.
Well, that helps make it fun, doesn't it?
Yes.
I mean, the little fun that there is in doing this grueling sport. Adam, before we go, I want to give you a couple minutes to describe to our listeners this near photo finish finale to this recent CCIW championship meet, which ultimately Carthage won, but by the skin of its teeth. What was this final event all about?
Yeah, so, you know, I'll let Adam talk about it a little bit, but because he was a huge part of it because it came down to that last relay. So, you know, there's so many things that lead to how close the meet was. So, you know, our biggest rival for a long time now in our conference has been Wheaton College out of Wheaton, Illinois, and a lot of back and forth over the years, and this year was no different. And so we came in on the very first day of the meet with a substantial lead, and knowing the whole time that, you know, Wheaton had stronger days ahead of them as far as their events and which events they were more focused on. And yeah, it came down to going into the very last relay, which is the 400 freestyle relay. So everybody, all four guys doing a 100 freestyle. It came down to us being down by 4 points going into that relay. So we had to win the B relay, and there's A and B heats, right? So the B relay heat that goes before the final A heat, which Adam was in, scores points, but scores technically a less amount of points than the A relay. But we had to win the B relay, and then we maybe didn't necessarily have to win the A relay, but things had to shake out a certain way.
Right.
So I had some coaching to do there where, you know, I had to decide, was I going to pull someone like Adam potentially off of the A relay to make sure that we won the B relay and then, you know, hope that we also still were able to win the A relay, not knowing what Wheaton was going to do. And we ended up just sticking and trusting our guys that we had on the B relay. And certainly a couple of them were fast enough to be on the A relay anyway. They proved that their whole careers, but especially on that relay. I would say the person that really, really did it for us and solidified our championship, honestly, was one of Adam's best friends, Garrett Schultes, another senior who led off that B relay against right next to in the same lanes that he had just been beaten by a Wheaton guy the day before. And he, you know, did his job, you know, and beat that Wheaton swimmer substantially, which set us up to just barely by a tenth of a second win that B relay, which then just lit a fire under these guys for the A relay, and they just completely ran away with it on that last event. So I don't know if you had anything else to add to how special that was.
It was amazing, and I've won two other CCIW championships with Carthage, and by far this was the most special one. I mean, Wheaton, we had a dual meet with Wheaton earlier in the year, and it ended the exact same way, where we went down, we were behind in points by like 3 points once again going into the final relay. And so, you know, Garrett and I had talked to our teammates and said, listen, it's going to come down to it in the same way once again. And so we were ready. And, I mean, like Seth said, the energy in the pool when the B relay won was incredible. Because at that moment, I mean, me and the three other guys that were on the A relay, we looked at each other and we were like, oh, yeah. We can do this.
We have this.
This is it.
And you did it.
And we did it, yeah.
You know, when you see a photo of the team holding that banner as the champs and the joy just leaps off the page. I mean, what a glorious, glorious moment for all of you. Well, congratulations on that championship. And thank you for sharing so much about this sport that you both love/hate and and about the great success that you've both enjoyed as part of Carthage's swim team. Seth Weidman as the coach and